Welcome to Grounds for Discussion, a book club podcast for the average Joe.
Welcome to Grounds for Discussion. I'm Becky.
And I'm Laura.
And today we are talking about the book, The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien. And Laura, you kind of sprung this one on me because I have not read it before. And it was like, I had no idea what it was about. And I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. Like maybe a mystery or something. I mean, I went into it totally blind, which I like to do sometimes.
Yeah, I do too.
And wow. Yeah. Not at all what I was thinking.
Yeah. It's not a pleasure.
No.
Read. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's not. It's hard to read a little bit, which yeah. I kind of feel bad that that ended up being the case because I feel like we've had a lot of heavy stuff. But
we have, actually, yes. But that's okay.
We need a light read.
We do.
but yeah, so yeah, do you want to kind of tell people about it? Give a little.
Sure. Before synopsis? I do that, though, are you drinking any coffee this morning?
Of course.
What you drinking? Of course.
I actually, big surprise, used it as an excuse
Starbucks. For you. Yes.
To do the old SB run. Sure. And I swear I do not go there every day, Becky. I swear I do.
I don't know if I believe you.
But I know, right? And the funny thing is I keep my coffee cups. How weird is that? I'm totally grateful.
Oh, you know, I have seen you do that. And
I feel like it tastes better out of the cup. Isn't that sad?
Well, I kind of understand that, but I personally do not do it, but it's okay, to each his own.
Yeah. Anyway, so I gotta have a
cute coffee cup. That's what my thing
well,
is.
Well, and usually, like, when I have coffee, I like to have a cute coffee cup. But for some reason, when it's iced coffee, it doesn't matter as much to me or something. I don't know. It's weird.
The iced coffee, though, I do not drink hardly ever, so.
And I drink a fair amount of iced coffee, so.
I can kind of understand that, then. Because you see the ice through the thing.
Right. It's like I feel like I need to see it.
Yeah. Okay. Carry on.
Yeah. So that's my MO. Anyway. So so I got the – have you had any of the – you probably haven't. The pistachio?
No.
I got like a pistachio like cold brew or whatever. The Yeah. With the foam or whatever.
Interesting. Do you
like
it?
Lovely, I think. I enjoy it.
Really? I don't know if I would like that. I like pistachio, but when I think of coffee, I don't think of pistachio.
And I agree. And I sort of, I totally get where you're coming from. So when I first tried it, I was like, well, see. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. I don't necessarily get a lot of pistachio from the coffee itself. Like, I'm not getting a ton of pistachio, but the flavor that I get, I like.
Okay.
I just don't know that it's necessarily reading as pistachio to me. Okay. I do like it. And I like pistachio, so I don't know if I just don't have a good... I probably just don't have a good palate. Can't taste pistachio in it. But but whatever it is they got going, which I assume is pistachio.
Yeah. So they say.
They say it's pistachio, but I don't know.
Well, I do understand like a nuttier... coffee.
Yes. So. I like nutty type coffees. Hazelnut.
Yes. Coconut.
Coconut. you know, Brazil nut.
I
mean, who doesn't love a good Brazil nut coffee?
A Brazilian nut chocolate covered coffee. Okay. that lasted way too long, huh?
Sure did.
So, anywho.
So, that's what I'm drinking. What you got going on there?
I'm doing a little cinnamon coffee this morning. Ran by the good old feed store in town. And.
Why?
So it's a feed store / antique shop, okay? / greenhouse. And
this up?
I am not making this up at all. And, that's, you know, sometimes sometimes they sell little bottles of caramel. So
at the feed store greenhouse antique shop.
Yes, I think it's more part of the antique. I don't know.
Okay. It's an antique caramel. I don't know if I'd like that. I gotta tell you.
Well, whatever they're putting in it, it's delish.
Neither one of us knows what we're drinking, but we like it.
Well, what is happening? Okay. All that to say, they didn't have it. So I was very disappointed. I was very disappointed, Laura, so I had to go with cinnamon. That was the whole point of that story.
I'm sorry. I got caught up on so much of it, and then it turned out not to even matter. Oh, dear. Oh, goodness. I'm sorry. That one
well,
tickled me.
You know, I mean, I live in a small town, and one store needs to be multiple stores.
Clearly.
So that's part of the story. That's where I get my caramel from.
So I went to the Farrier / Wendy's /
butcher shop.
ATM / Fur Makers.
Welcome to Woodbury.
/ Tannery.
Tannery.
Oh my goodness. That's
you need to
awesome.
Have these one shop stop shops, Laura. We're not the big city of Jacksonville.
The big legs. Say the big legs.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, dear. Oh, goodness. That's hilarious. Wow.
So, yeah. That's a whole thing, huh, apparently.
Well, that's just that small town charm you hear about. You know?
Yes.
Oh, I love it. Anywho. Smartly along.
Yes. Where were we?
So the when we started thinking about like books for this season, if you will. we kind of were like thinking about things that we could do, like bring more people into. But of course we wanted to have some stuff that was just still us because frankly, you know, logistics wise.
Right.
We can't have, you know, one of them.
Right. Silliness.
You know, like that. So, so this was one that I thought would just be a good read to mm-hmm. talk about because mm-hmm. I wanted to hear what you thought.
Yeah. Okay.
Truth statement here, like truth time.
Yeah.
And Becky knows this, but it's been a minute and I feel mm-hmm. like I feel bad because I've done this a few times lately.
It's your MO.
And so you're going to have to help me out with some of the details.
Sure. Okay. So I am going to read a summary. It's rather long, but it might, you know, help you recall some of the things.
I think it probably will. So, yeah. So tell me the synopsis here.
Okay. So The Things They Carried is 22 short stories that range in length from just a few paragraphs to fully fleshed out dramatic narratives of 20 pages or more.
Yeah.
The stories are largely written. Sorry, that was obviously not in the
little
summary.
Commentary in there.
The stories are largely written in first person from the point of view of a single narrator, Tim O'Brien, who is the author. While there are 22 separate stories, the book is made up of a few central dramatic events that are repeatedly featured. In The Things They Carried, a soldier named Ted Lavender takes a shot to the head while the first lieutenant, Jimmy Cross, daydreams about his love, Martha. In On the Rainy River, so that's one of the chapters, the narrator confronts the decision of whether or not to go to war by escaping to a fishing lodge run by an old man named Elroy. In How to Tell a True War Story, Kurt Lemon dies from a grenade explosion, and his friend, Rat Kylie, tortures a baby water buffalo. In Sweetheart of the Song, Trabong, a soldier's young girlfriend, flies from Cleveland to Vietnam and becomes deeply involved in the action. In Ambush, the narrator describes the time that he killed a man. Stories 15 and 17 describe the death of a soldier named Kiowa, who drowned in a mud field during an attack. In The Ghost Soldiers, the narrator seeks revenge on a field medic for his mistreatment of a wound the narrator suffers during battle. In Story 22, the narrator remembers a childhood friend of his who passed away at the age of 9 and reflects on the nature of memory, death, and storytelling. Throughout all these stories, the narrator frequently offers reflections on both the craft of writing and the nature of truth. These reflections become intertwined with the stories in complicated ways that fragment the reader's sense of what is true and what is merely fiction. It is for this complicated intertwining of truth and fiction that The Things They Carried is celebrated as both an accurate portrait of the Vietnam War and as a work of expertly crafted fiction. So that's a broad overview, but it did go into a little bit of detail on some of the stories. So it's a collection of stories. It's kind of hard to tell a summary of it just because of that.
Right.
Did that jar your memory with any?
It did. The only one where I was definitely like, I don't remember that at all, was about his childhood friend that passed away.
Oh, yeah.
I just, for some reason, do not remember that one.
Yeah.
But all the others, for sure.
That story was actually near the end of the book, I think. And he went back in his memory to this girl that he was in love with at the age of 9, and they took her out. He said it was his first date, but he took her, and it was his mom and dad and him and her, and I can't remember where they went. It was like someplace fun. I think it was the movies, and she had on this like red hat, and it was kind of like a silly looking hat with like a puff top, you know, and he commented on it, and his mom kind of glared at him, and he's like, what? Like, he couldn't think of anything else to say. And she just smiled, and he talked about how he was so in love with her, and he knew he was, you know, going to marry her. And then he finds out from, I think it's someone in his class that said something about, hey, your girlfriend is dead. And he found out after that that she passed away from leukemia. And she was sick that whole time. I think there was a section before that, I forgot this part, where a little boy in the classroom had like taken her hat. They kind of teased her and took her hat off, and you could tell she had like the scraggly hair, you know.
Oh,
like,
maybe I repressed that one.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she just quietly put it back on.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. Why did I make you read that?
No, I didn't have any. I didn't have any issues with that. I really had. It was okay. So let me say this: the beginning of the book, it was, I don't know how many pages of, and-so-and-so carried this, and-so-and-so carried this, and-so-and-so. I mean, it just went on for probably 35 minutes of, wow, okay. And I was thinking, if this is the whole book, I am definitely skimming it. Like,
oh, no.
It was rough. It was really rough. But the whole point of that first section was, okay, they might... Well, I think there were a couple of things to that first section. Number one, comparing the things that they physically carried to the things that they mentally carried.
Yeah.
Because then the rest of the book is about all these little stories,
which is
not little, but stories about the mental part of the Vietnam War and right. how they had to cope with those things and carry them for the rest of their lives. Right. So I think that was one of the things that he was trying to get at with that. But right. That first section was really hard for me. And so once I started to get into the stories, I actually not enjoyed, but like it was much easier to read yeah. in a sense. I don't want to say easy either because once, it was yeah. hard. It was yeah. hard to read.
Because the content's hard. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I kept actually thinking of, did you go to, I remember going to a movie with Dan, our brother, and I think you were there too, but it was Saving Private oh, Ryan. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I had flashbacks to that movie, Laura, and I,
oh, no.
like, as I was reading, yeah. I remember thinking, when I was in that movie, I kept looking at the exit sign, like that first whole first scene of Saving Private Ryan. I looked at that exit sign and I was like, I want to go out. I want to go out. I want to go out. Like, I don't even know why I stayed in there. I don't know. Like, why did I stay in? But
I did leave. I don't know if you remember.
Did you? That. I don't. Yeah.
I left but it wasn't the beginning scene. The beginning scene was very hard.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, this is, I knew what I was going to see.
Yeah.
I knew it would be hard, but yeah. this is okay. You know what? Okay. Just try to chill, you know? It was somewhere in the middle and it just, it was, I couldn't, I needed a break.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I left for a while.
Okay.
And I don't even... Clearly, maybe you guys didn't even know. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know. How could we not notice you leaving?
Or maybe you just don't remember, you yeah. know, because it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But that's so interesting that you were, like, having actual, like, flashbacks.
Oh, oh yeah. I kept thinking. Awful. I mean, not that I couldn't. I'm a totally different person now than I was then. And I think right. I was just very naive and, like, I had no idea, you yeah. know, I didn't right. know.
And what's crazy is that was World War II, which again, I mean, it's still war.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that war experts talk about Vietnam
yeah.
is totally different from the way they talk about World War II, because most people in World War II saw, you know, like maybe a battle mm. or two.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like they yeah. didn't. Most of them, there were so many people
yeah.
enlisted.
Yeah.
And it would, you know, some of them saw tons of action,
mm-hmm.
but some of them didn't see much at all.
Hmm.
And so in that sense, it's just completely different from these guys in Vietnam who
yeah.
were literally every single second yeah. they were in mortal danger.
Yes.
Like every single second they were over there.
Yeah.
Was just, there was no off.
This is one thing I wanted to talk about, the difference between this war versus previous wars, because I do not remember studying the Vietnam War in school. And if we did, we did not cover much of it because I really didn't know much about, I mean, I still don't know much about Vietnam, but I kind of did a little research after the book. And the way that the U.S. looked at this war versus other wars was so different. And I think because of that, the way that people were treated was completely different.
Yep.
And I cannot imagine, I think someone was saying once 9/11 happened, we kind of became, it was a little bit more patriotic in the sense that, like, we would say, thank you for your service or, you know, things like that. And we kind of went back to those things. But Vietnam was in no way, shape, or form like that.
Right.
Like, these soldiers came back. They were drafted, had no choice.
Right.
And went over and saw just horrific, horrific things and came back and people were spitting in their faces. Like, I cannot imagine, like, the turmoil that these men went through and then to come back and just, like, I mean, this book talks about some of them committed suicide. Some of them,
right,
you know, like, deliberately did things to try and get out of it.
Right. And you look at, you know, we talk about like, well, we call it PTSD now.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was called PTSD at that time. I think that's a more modern term.
Yeah.
I think especially maybe like after World War One, they started using the term shell shock to kind of describe what they were seeing in soldiers coming back from the front.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it was just not well understood at all. And they just thought, a lot of them were written off as cowards. Like, you are a coward because you got scared when the fighting started and you know, deserters are going to, you know, will be shot kind of thing. And no, just had very little understanding of what happens psychologically to soldiers who have been fighting.
Right.
But after Vietnam was when I think it really started to be more studied and more looked at what this really was and why was it happening and why was it so much more prevalent in Vietnam soldiers?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the stereotypical, like the ones who are, you know, to this day still waking up with night terrors and, you know, you really, it's kind of dangerous to sleep in the same bed as them or, you know what I mean? Like, that's where we really started to see a much bigger interest in, okay, wait, what is, we knew there was something, but we got to figure this out now. Cause this is, it's like all of them, you know?
Yeah.
And the reason being, I think we know now because this, it was just totally different being a soldier in Vietnam versus being a soldier in any of the other engagements that we've had.
Right.
Again, war, you know, there's the same war as hell. So it's not going to be good. It's never going to be good.
Right.
And there's still a ton of guys, like I said, who saw tons of action in other engagements, but this particular one, I think was kind of the start of, okay, like, we got to figure this out and we need to know how to help them. And we need to, you know, and so, like they'd come back and they'd be completely, you know, looked down upon and,
right.
and physically attacked right off the planes. And like, you know, and so
I think too,
go ahead.
A lot of Americans didn't agree with the Vietnam War is
right.
I mean, you know, so they looked at it completely different than like we're protecting our country. They thought, well, why are we even over there?
And so, to be fair, they kind of had a point on that one.
Oh like, yeah, I agree, mean, but that affected how they treated the veterans.
Absolutely.
And that's not right. And so, you know, they come back to people just absolutely hating them and they had no choice. That's the sad part. It's like they had these, when they were in Vietnam, they had commanding officers telling them to shoot and not ask questions and just shoot to kill no matter who it is. And I think that's part of the trauma too. They killed people that they knew were innocent. They knew. Children.
That was
women.
A big part of it. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I think in other engagements and other, you know, wars, there, I feel like there was a better sense of just general order.
Yes.
And I think that's probably due to the nature of the style of fighting. You know, you talk about World War One or World War Two. I mean, World War One was literal, you know, trench warfare. You're stuck in a trench.
Right.
So you know exactly where the enemy is, you know, at all times because you're in a trench. Those are your people. The other trench are the other people.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Easy. You know, I mean, so this is, I mean, I feel like this is all really like obvious, but you know, I mean, so when you get into a situation where you have no idea who the enemy is,
It
feels pretty natural to get paranoid and be like, just shoot first, ask questions later, because otherwise you will be the one who's dead.
Yeah.
You know. And that's just horrifying to think of.
Yeah, that was even mentioned in one of the stories. What I thought was interesting about this book was that it very much read like a memoir, but it was not a memoir. But
When I first started reading it, I didn't know much about it. I thought it was real.
Yeah, I did too. I looked it up after a couple chapters. Yeah. Because it reads exactly like that. But then later on in the book, he kind of plays with the idea of truth. And he makes you think about, like, what part of these stories are true, what is not true, and does it matter? Does it matter if the story is true or if the general idea of what happened is the concept that he wants to portray? Which I thought was really interesting for him as a storyteller to kind of bring that up to the reader.
Because there was so much of that going on anyway. People thought they knew what was happening over there. Mm-hmm. People thought they knew, you know, because they'd hear about these atrocities and have no context with which to even remotely interpret that. So if you hear somebody shooting a baby, you're going to be up in arms.
Yeah.
But if you have no understanding of the psychological trauma surrounding what happened, and the paranoia that happens in the brain and the, you know, just all of the messed up thinking of being in that place.
Yeah.
You there's no way to interpret that correctly without having been there.
Right.
And so, and that's always going to be the case with war. And we always talk about the victors, right? The right history. And it's true. But, oh my goodness. Like, I thought it was really interesting, that whole concept of, you know, messing with, here's another story, which may or may not have happened.
Right, right.
I thought it was so interesting because for me, it totally brought up, I used to have a acting professor in college. His name is Gary Barker and he was awesome. But anyway, he used to say all the time, he was like, guys, it's all about verisimilitude. And verisimilitude is this idea of, like, basically what looks real or what looks like real life. So he would say, like, for instance, you know, this one time I was walking down the street and I happened to see this, like, clown on a street corner. And he was like, I can't remember. He says he was doing something, or it was just something so odd. Like, he just almost felt like he was in a play. And he's like, what is going on? And he would talk about, okay, so remember how I told you about that story? I can't write that story as a play. No one will believe it. You have to, it has to look like reality. Almost so much so that it becomes fake and reality becomes, you know what I mean? Like, you can't write things that really happen because they're too weird. Sometimes. Does that make sense? And so that concept in theater is called verisimilitude. You have to have a believability about the events that occur.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And so to me, it just was like, it was totally hearkening back to my, like, acting days of, like, thinking about what looks real on a stage versus what is real in the world.
Right.
And those two things don't always line up. It was really interesting to me.
Yeah.
To see that that has applications outside of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, yeah, okay. Like, maybe this one's true, maybe it's not. Maybe this is a good picture of what you think Vietnam was like, but you weren't there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know because he was there that he did see certain things. It's just, it's strange as you're reading it.
Was Tim O'Brien a soldier?
I think he was. I think was he was. Okay. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yes. But it's just weird to think, like,
Which just adds one more layer of weird.
Yeah. Like, as you're reading, he could be making all of this up, but it's based on how he saw things happen.
Yeah.
So it's a strange dynamic reading that, you know? Yeah. Were there any stories that stuck out to you that you will, even if you don't remember the rest of the book, will remember that story? There's a couple for me, but I'm just curious if you have any.
Yeah, I remembered, for some reason, the guy who carried all the letters from the girl that he wasn't even actually dating. And for this, for a while, you think, oh, this is his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And you come to realize, oh, she barely knows him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're acquaintances, mm-hmm. you know, like, and, yeah. oh, that's just, it's something about that is so heartbreaking to me. Mm. Like that she's, yeah. it so gives you this something to grasp onto of that, you know, hope springs eternal, like yeah. youth, like so young, marching yeah. off to something they have no idea. Of what it's going to do to them. Yeah. No concept. And the older you get, the more Ben and I look around and go, oh my gosh, we really do send our children to war. This is Hunger Games. Like, you know, the older you get, the more you look at these young recruits. Hmm. Oh, like just, it's just heart-wrenching yeah. to me. Yeah. Anyway, so that whole thing really stuck out to me. Like, oh, it's so sad. It's so yep. sad. You know? And then also those...
I was just going to say with that story, that was that picture that he was looking at and like daydreaming about was actually, as he was doing that, another one of his soldiers under his care, like, I think he was shot. And so he yes, took on yeah. that responsibility and that like heaviness of, well, yep. I was daydreaming. I could have yes. saved this guy and I didn't because I was daydreaming. And so then he like hated right. her in his mind.
Yeah. So now that person becomes the embodiment of something super shameful and guilty to him.
Right.
So
right.
If he goes back and sees her on the street, it's going to be mm-hmm. like,
it's a trigger.
You're the worst person sure. ever, you know? Yeah.
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 yeah. So anyway, what was your next one that you were going
to share? And then the one about the author, the narrator character, mm-hmm. Trying to run away from the draft. And and not being successful where he, yeah. you know, so I think you mentioned it briefly in the synopsis, but he goes to, like someplace near the border of Canada and mm-hmm. I can't remember where he lived in the,
I think Minnesota,
anyway, Minnesota. Okay.
Yep. Minnesota.
And, yes. And just he doesn't even tell anybody anything. And I feel like even his family didn't really quite know what was going on.
Yeah. He dropped his job. Like, he walked out halfway through the day in his job and yeah. just left.
Yeah. And just that story, I don't know, I thought was really interesting about, like, it was all so internal. Like, he mm-hmm. didn't vocalize any of it. And again, I think that says, I think that's what he was going for. Like yeah. this whole war was just so internal yeah. because who do you talk to about it?
Right.
I mean, most of the people you were there with are dead. Mm. And those that aren't just, again, they cannot possibly have a context.
Right.
And so, you know, who in the world can you even process mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. So I think that was another part of it too, and that it started even before he left, of this mm-hmm. just very internal struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but then he goes and he just fishes and then he just goes home. Like yeah. and goes to the war. And that was
He also like the last sentence, I can't remember the specific sentence, but it had something to do with like, I chose the coward's way and I went to war.
Yes. Yeah.
And the way that he phrased that was so interesting because it's like, okay, so he considers himself a coward because he right. said, okay, I'm going to go back home. Yeah. I'm going to go to war. Yeah.
And the whole culture was saying you're a coward if you try to get out of it.
Yeah.
And he was saying, no, I was a coward because I didn't mm-hmm. try to get out. You know,
what do you think he meant? What do you think he meant by that?
I think that there is, I think obviously he chose it was a no-win situation because either you're going to be stigmatized right. for being a Vietnam right. soldier who obviously did a bunch of atrocities and mm-hmm. just killed a bunch of innocent people, or you're going to be, you know, labeled as a draft dodger and you didn't mm. do your duty for your country. There was mm-hmm. no mm-hmm. way to win for these guys who were draft age.
Yeah.
Well, how, you know, you can't win either one way or the other.
Yep.
You know, so I think he was saying that for me, I knew that this war was not good. Mm. I mean, obviously war is never good, but this particular war probably had less to do with anything we really needed to be.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
This particular war was not, first of all, when we got involved in something that we really couldn't win.
Right.
And any soldier's going to tell you, like, don't start a fight you can't finish. Like, yeah. Don't, why start, you know?
Yeah.
And second, he just knew that it wasn't right for him to go. And, mm-hmm. well, for any of them to go. But, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was interesting how he used the word coward. And I don't know if he necessarily felt like he... I don't know if the author felt like he really was a coward. I don't think that was what he was trying to get at, personally. I think
he was trying to make us question what it meant to be a coward at that time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think he wanted us to ask the questions.
Yeah.
You think you know what the coward is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we should just reevaluate what really meant to be a coward at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So... a few of the stories that stuck out to me, one would be the water buffalo, the baby water buffalo. Do you remember that story?
I feel like, again, remember something about it, but again, I don't know if I really am starting to wonder if I block some of these or if I just don't remember.
Well, it's hard. It's a hard read. But yeah. this one, when I was reading it, I was like, what is going on? But he, one of the soldiers finds a baby water buffalo. They like bring it back to their camp, I think. And I might be wrong on some of these details, but I remember the general gist. Okay. So, nice. One of the soldiers starts shooting it, but starts shooting it in areas where he knows the water buffalo is not going to die. And he puts a ton of rounds into this water buffalo. And finally, I mean, the water buffalo is like crying out, you know, in agony. And finally he kills it. But he puts like tons and tons of shots into it, you know, like doing the kneecaps and the, you know, like all these areas where it's like, you're not going to kill this thing by just shooting it there. And it just seems so warped to me. But
yeah.
In my mind, I was thinking, yes, that's horrible. However, this was happening to people too. Like, right. And so I don't know. It didn't seem, this sounds kind of bad, but it didn't seem as bad as what was happening to the people there. But I think that wasn't the point of the story. I think the point of the story was, he was releasing his, there was a whole sense of like warped views on death and dying, mm-hmm. and, ways that they had to learn to cope with death that mm-hmm. they were not equipped for. And, like they talk about this one guy that was, a civilian that they came across his body and they propped him up and like had tea with him and shook his hand and gave him high fives. And it like that whole idea of honoring the dead, not there, you know? And that was really, that's like, I don't even know how to describe how I felt when I was reading that. It was hard.
Yeah.
It's just the complete opposite of what you think when a person dies, what should happen, you know?
Right.
Like, even if this man was your enemy and, like, he deserves respect, like...
Right.
But I mean, again, I understand what he's trying to convey there. They had to learn how to cope with death. And the way that they learned how to cope with death was through humor and through this warped view.
Yeah, that's something that I've learned more so through well through Ben, because he's had a lot of military friends over the years because of his job. Mm-hmm. Biomed is a big, like a lot of people, you know, from the military do, you know, their time in the military. And then once they get out, they still have a pretty fair career ahead of them if they've been doing biomed. Well, whatever they've been doing, because usually military, you retire at 20 years. So he's had a lot of military friends who have come out of that and then had a full biomed career after.
Okay.
Like in a hospital or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so he's had a lot of ex-military friends who have talked about that it's just it starts at the very beginning of the Army trying to kind of desensitize you to death and make it like, soldiers are some of the most crass people you will ever meet. Like, they're just very vulgar and crass, and it's because that's been bred into them in the military, because it's kind of the easiest coping mechanism to sort of teach. And so, yeah, they'll say stuff about, you know, death or being, you know, they'll joke about their own death. They'll joke about, you know, they'll describe how somebody died in detail like it's no big deal. They'll, you know what I mean? Like, it's the only way that they know as a group kind of how to cope. And I remember even Andy, our nephew, I remember him talking about that it's just very hard being with so many people who are just, you know, they speak in ways that are very hard to get used to.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a way to keep them alive in the field.
Yeah, because if you think, like, what would they have done if they came across a bunch of dead bodies?
Right.
How do you deal with that? And you, like,
you don't have time to grieve
to all lay the loss down. You're seeing. Right, right. Yeah.
You don't have time to grieve it then. That's for later. So the military, they know that.
Right.
They know that you are not going to be able to mentally process everything you see. Right. Sadly, that will have to wait for later.
And if it debilitates you.
Right now, you have to stay alive.
Right. If it debilitates you, you're dead.
And you have to keep your guys alive.
Yeah.
You can't lay down on the job or other people die.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, that is the name of the game. That is war.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a pretty heavy one, and I understand why anyone listening would be like, well, I'm not reading that.
Right.
But honestly, yeah. I mean, do you feel like every page was that way, or do you feel like it was a cumulative thing, or what do you think?
I feel like you did have some moments of not heavy, like, it wasn't heavy as heavy. But yeah. I do think it definitely was a cumulative.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
but I also think it's important reading.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, like,
I know that's why I struggle so much with this book, because,
We have the luxury of not. I don't have to read this book if I don't want to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's my luxury.
Yeah.
But for that generation of guys, they didn't have that luxury.
Yeah.
And not that that means that everything bad that happens in the world, we now have to dive headfirst, full in, all, you know. No.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it's a realization for me that, that I have that luxury. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Lord, for that luxury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So the other story that stuck out to me was the one where what was his name? It started with a K.
Kiowa.
Yeah. Where he died. And he was, because of the way that it's written, I'm not sure exactly how he died. I don't know if he was shot first or if he suffocated, but the lieutenant set up camp. they set up camp one night in a field, which actually ended up being the latrine for like this village, and they didn't realize it, and it started raining, got all muddy, and like it was a field of poop. And
yeah,
there was gunfire, and I don't know if he was shot or if he somehow like he like faded into the muck, and he died. And they took the time to wade through that field to find his, well, first they found his sack, and then they eventually found him and used all this energy to get him out and lay him aside. And they had so much respect for him, and he was like really well loved. And yeah, like there was this one guy that was making like jokes about it and stuff, and that didn't go over well. But it's kind of interesting because they made jokes about everything else, but then the other guys were like, we can't handle that kind of joking with him.
Yeah.
But just the way that he died was like so degrading and just sad. It's like, I can't even imagine. And that's one of those stories where it's like, really, really, would this really happen?
Right.
But it very well could have. And that's the disturbing part of it.
Right. Right. It's almost more disturbing than if he had just said this seriously happened.
Right. Right.
Like, if you knew for sure that really happened, that's almost less disturbing.
Mm. Yeah.
Than being like, could that happened, like, I don't know. Yeah,
because if that can happen, imagine what else could have happened.
Yeah
it the way that it's written, it makes your mind wander a lot more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is part of the genius of it. Yeah. The way that it's written, which is weird to say because of the content, but
right. I know, it kind of makes you want to read something else of his to see if he's...
Yeah, I think he wrote quite a few war stories, though.
Yeah, you got to wonder if you're good for anything else at that point.
Yeah, and also, can I handle it, you know?
Yeah.
Can I handle another one of his war stories?
Oh, no, I just meant, like, whether Tim O'Brien could write anything else. Like, you know?
Right,
like, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
But then also, can I... I read another one of his? Yeah so anyway,
well, I don't know if there's much more that we can,
yeah,
because it is really just almost vignettes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like a chronological,
right,
you know, kind of thing, and I think that's on purpose too.
Yeah.
So I think probably, are you ready
time for some ratings? Yes.
Yeah, you want to go first or you want me to?
I think you should go first.
Okay. This is interesting because, again, like I said, I always try to kind of incorporate our
discussion
mm-hmm. as sort of part of my rating.
Right.
And so I wasn't quite sure what I was going to give it. I had a pretty good idea, but I am going to give it a Pete's because it just feels like essential reading, maybe not for high schoolers, mm-hmm. but for anyone who doesn't have an understanding of how much our soldiers really go through.
Yeah.
And what it takes to fight for your nation. And that's in no way me saying that's good, that particular thing is good or bad. That's not me saying, oh, it's an amazing thing to be a soldier or it's not.
Right.
That's not for me to decide, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's something that, for me anyway, I feel like I have the luxury of looking away if I want to, which makes me not want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Almost like a way of acknowledging to them, I see you. I see what you went through.
Right.
I don't. I really don't.
Right.
But I'm willing to go there with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mentally.
Turning away is even more of a disrespectful, you know, thing. Yeah. So I was really all over the board with this one.
I kind of wondered. I was like, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah. There's a lot to consider with it. Like, would I want to read it again? No. Yeah. Would I recommend it? Absolutely. Was it hard to read? 100%. Yeah. In fact, after that first section, I was thinking, I'm not going to make it through this book. And then as I kept reading, I was thinking, I'm not going to make it through this book for different reasons. So, but I did, and I, you know, didn't skim it. I did read it. So, this is just a really hard one for me. I think, like you said, the discussion comes into play. If I was forced to make a decision at this point, I would say Edge of Alya. But if I had read it and not processed it with anyone, I would probably say, I don't know. I would be tempted to say like a Duncan.
Okay.
But I knew at the end of the reading that it was so important that I read it. So I don't know. I don't know. This is like the hardest one I think I've ever had to rate.
Oh, wow.
I'm
not sure I realized that would be the case. I knew it would be interesting. I was like, okay, I don't know where this will go. But
I think I am always like pretty set, especially by the end of the discussion, on where I will rate things. And I'm just so not there. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, what you think? Maybe like a 2.5, like a dunk of Alya. I don't know how to say that one.
I think I would rate it higher just because I think it's a necessary read. So I would want people to read it.
Yeah.
But I did not at all enjoy the content, but that's not always what reading is about. See how I'm going all sorts of places in my head?
I know.
Right? So I guess a Javalia, but I hesitate to do any rating just because it was such a different read for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, does it almost feel disrespectful to you to rate it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because I didn't like it, but I also don't think I have to like it to realize and recognize that it's important.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It wasn't as much about my enjoyment as it was what the content, you know?
Right. Yeah, I can understand that for sure.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, so I would say, you know, if you are listening and you're just like, okay, I got the gist, I do not need to delve into that, that's okay.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But if you feel like I want to, you know, go there, you know, I would recommend it.
I would.
If you feel like you can go there, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I would say even if you don't feel like you're prepared to go there, I think it's important to read.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not if it's going to cause you to derail completely mentally or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, so our next one I haven't read. So yes. I can't tell you if it will be any lighter. Becky, you
It will be different.
Okay.
But maybe not necessarily lighter, but different.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, do you want to tell?
Sure. We're going to do the book American Dirt. And I'm sorry, I didn't look up the author to refresh my memory, but yeah, it's called American Dirt, and it is...
It's a newer one, right?
Isn't that kind of I think it is, a newer title? Yes. I think so. Last couple of
years, maybe?
And it's a little bit of a longer book, but another one that's very well worth the read, so...
All right. Well, yes. I'm excited because I don't usually have zero concept, and this one I literally know nothing about but the title, so I'm kind of excited because I don't get that very often.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to have our conversation about it because I think it will be a good one. So I hope you all join us next time for Grounds for Discussion, where the coffee and the books are a perfect blend.